Space Cowboy Books presents Simultaneous Times, a science and speculative fiction podcast. Short stories to stir the imagination by contemporary authors.
Patient X5 by Cora Boulard. With music by Fog Machine. Read by Jean-Paul Garnier and Zara Kond. Dr. Emmanuel Hoppenstein was enjoying a well-deserved cup of Earl Grey when the door opened and his secretary, Bethany, popped her head in, red curls bobbing.
Doctor, the new patient is here, and it's a very unusual patient.
Send them in, then.
Emmanuel consulted his files.
And Bethany, next time ask for the patient's name, because I only have a code here.
Bethany blushed.
I'm sorry, but I think that it's their name.
She stammered.
You'll see.
Emmanuel sighed. Bethany had grown up in a very small, very white, very straight town, and was still new to the big city. She meant well, but the sheer diversity of the city was a bit much for her at times. He watched Bethany turn around, heard her say to the patient,
You can go in, sir. The doctor will see you now.
Thank you, miss, a scrupulously polite voice said. But the sir is both inaccurate and unnecessary. There was a whirring sound. Then the patient appeared. Emmanuel understood just what it was that had left poor Bethany so confused. The first thing he noticed was the plastic. Shiny, blinding white plastic. You always thought they were made of metal. But that was a prejudice stemming from decades of bad science fiction movies. In reality, they were made of smooth, shiny plastic, just like any other electronic device. Large, childlike eyes looked at him, a silent appeal for help and trust. Emmanuel knew that they were specifically designed to look cute, to appeal to our instincts, the same instincts that made humans care for babies, puppies, and fluffy kittens. It was applied psychology.
Doctor, it is so kind of you to see me,
the patient said in superciliously polite tones and floated into the office on hidden wheels. The patient held out a ball-jointed plastic hand. It was a test, and Emmanuel knew it. He took the hand and shook it. It felt like shaking the hand of a department store model.
I know that I am not the usual kind of patient you see.
You'd be surprised,
Emmanuel said.
Quite a few of my patients are inorganic Americans, though usually they consult me online and don't come into my office in person.
Mainly because they were virtual personal assistants who did not have bodies.
I have to admit that I considered consulting you online, but I wanted to experience therapy like humans experience it. Is that silly?
Not at all,
Emmanuel said.
And for the record, it is very kind of you to open your practice to my kind, because many humans still feel uncomfortable with us.
I was in favor of the Personhood for Inorganic Americans Amendment, so it's only fair that I put my money where my mouth is, and the need is certainly there.
And wasn't that typical of humans? We even programmed our AIs to be neurotic.
I thank you for your support. But there is no need to refer to me as an inorganic American. Robot is perfectly fine. After all, that is what I am.
The robot looked around, its head swiveling 360 degrees.
How does this work? Do I have to get on the couch? Because I fear that my lack of human legs will make lying down on the couch difficult.
We can do this however you prefer,
Emmanuel said.
You can sit or lie down on the couch, whichever you wish.
In that case, is it all right if I remain standing?
The robot asked. Emmanuel nodded.
Of course. It's important to me that my patients feel comfortable. Speaking of which,
he consulted his files again.
For some reason, I don't seem to have your name on file, only a model number.
The robot inclined its head. That is all right. My designation is SecurityBot X5.
So you do not use a different name?
Emmanuel asked.
Many of your kind do.
I was not given any other name, so I am SecurityBot X5. Just as your name is Emmanuel Hoffenstein. Most likely because that is what your parents named you, not what you named yourself.
Indeed.
Emmanuel agreed.
But while humans may stick with the names their parents gave them, many also have nicknames. For example, I'm Doc to my friends.
He smiled.
Not very imaginative, I know.
The robot seemed to consider. In that case, you may call me Wurr. It is the name that the humans who work in the office building where I am stationed have given me. Emmanuel leaned back in his chair and picked up his tablet.
Okay, so what brings you to my office today, Wurr?
Wurr let its head hang. I am confused about my feelings. Emmanuel made a note on his tablet.
That's what brings most of my patients here. So which feelings are you confused about?
Well, to begin with, I am confused that I have feelings at all, because I was not programmed to have feelings.
Inorganic Americans were not programmed to be sentient either, yet you are.
Emmanuel pointed out.
It is possible for all of us to become more than what we were meant to be, to transcend our programming, so to say.
So you do not think that these feelings I have are a glitch? A mere programming error? Wurr sounded hopeful.
I wouldn't tell a human patient that their feelings are just a mistake, so why would I suggest such a thing to an inorganic patient?
Wurr's already large eyes became even larger. So my feelings are real? They said hopefully.
If you're feeling it, it's real.
Thank you, Doctor, Wurr said, all but bobbing with joy. This is so helpful.
That's what I'm here for. So, what kind of feelings are we talking about anyway?
Wurr lowered their head, as if they couldn't meet Emmanuel's eyes. I know it sounds silly, but I think I am in love.
Why should that be silly? Love is one of the most basic feelings there is.
Yes, but I am a robot, Wurr said, their head still lowered. And I am not even sure if robots are capable of feeling love.
If you feel love, then you're capable of feeling it.
Wurr looked up, LED eyes shining.
Could it really be that simple?
Emmanuel made some notes on his tablet.
It usually is. So, do you want to tell me about the object of your love?
Wurr looked confused, so Emmanuel added,
Is it another robot? An artificial intelligence? A human being?
Human, Wurr said after a while.
She is human. Her name is Megan, and she works in the office building I am assigned to guard and protect.
Wurr's artificial voice took on a dreamy note.
To many of the humans, I'm just a thing, but not to Megan. She is always friendly and wishes me a good morning every day. And yesterday, she even patted me on the head, and it felt good.
Emmanuel leaned back in his chair and listened, occasionally tapping notes into his tablet. Romantic doubts? Probably the third most common reason patients consulted him after anxiety and depression. And the percentages weren't any different for inorganic patients. After all, humans had made them in their image, so they'd given them their flaws as well. It was endearing, really.
Have you considered telling Megan how you feel?
Emmanuel said gently, once Wurr had finished recounting his daily interactions with the object of his affections.
You mean I should just talk to her?
Wurr asked, as if Emmanuel's suggestions were the revelation of some great hidden wisdom.
Since humans, and robots, are not capable of reading minds, Talking to someone is usually the best way of expressing your feelings and finding out whether or not they are requited,
Emmanuel replied.
So why don't you talk to Megan and tell her how you feel?
And if she does not feel the same, Wer wanted to know.
Then at least you'll know. Trust me, knowing is always better than not knowing. So go and talk to the young woman. After all, you've got nothing to lose and everything to gain.
How many times had Emmanuel said that to insecure patients, both organic and inorganic? Do you think that I should give her flowers? Or invite her for a coffee? Not that I can drink coffee, but I could keep her company. Emmanuel imagined Wer patrolling the lobby of an office building, a bunch of flowers in their hands. He suppressed a smile.
Do you know what Megan likes? Is there a specific flower or food or something else she enjoys?
Wer went still as they accessed their memory files. Blueberry muffins, Wer finally said. Sometimes, when Megan comes into the lobby, there are crumbs on her coat. And once, I saw her eating a blueberry muffin outside of the building. Emmanuel steepled his hands.
Well, then you know what to get her.
Wer bowed stiffly. Thank you, Doctor. You have been very helpful. Can I come and see you again next week? Emmanuel nodded.
Of course. Talk to Bethany to make an appointment.
Wer left, and Emmanuel leaned back in his synth leather office chair, a satisfied smile on his face. Another patient served. Trial in Majority by Andy Dibble, with music by Red Blue Black Silver. Read by Zara Kand and Jean-Paul Garnier.
I've already been acquitted,
Yusuf shrilled, because most people expected a guilty man would.
As you've told this court time and time again, Mr. Kassab.
The judge loomed on her bench like a carrion bird.
What is pertinent is not whether you committed the crime out there.
She waved her hand at no place in particular.
But what regime of truth this court attends to. This is not a court in the external world. There we glimpse majority opinion only statistically. There, truth never completely lifts her veil. Here in majority, truth and majority opinion are two sides of an equation.
She spoke with absolute conviction, as if God himself could not create a more perfect union.
But my acquittal was broadcast.
Across media channels that almost no one was awake to witness. We do not dispute the verdict of the other court. It acquitted you. It cohered to truth as well as it could. But here in majority, your guilt is no mere verdict. It is truth.
But I was acquitted.
As if saying it enough times might unblind justice. And in majority, it could. If he said it enough, and the majority believed him, the facts would shift like tumblers in a lock. But he had no way to persuade millions, so he said,
Don't you see? This is double jeopardy. It's unconstitutional.
He trailed off under her implacable gaze.
I'm sorry this is so difficult for you to understand, Mr. Kassab. Here in majority, your acquittal never happened, because only a minority of people believe that it did.
I accepted the implants and went to sleep because majority was supposed to be better, realer, living like a game. But why should I believe it?
He spat.
It's just a simulation.
He spread his hands to encompass not only the courtroom, but the sprawling city and the buzzing nations. His rebuke spanned the oceans. They fostered neither garbage in multitudinous tons nor unfathomed species. The majority knew only coastline views, cruise ships, and pop culture ecology. He meant the globe, which was not warming because shrewd environmentalists convinced most people it was not. He meant the Milky Way. Supermassive black hole notwithstanding, Earth was at the center because most people believe it must be at the center of something. Yusuf struck the table with his fist, but most believe tables are solid. It was solid. He yelped frustration. A crueler woman might have smiled, but she saw only a chance to finally communicate with a condemned man.
Bailiff, have Mr. Kassab rewound to the time of the crime.
The bailiff rearranged shining icons in the plane of air before him, controls that communicated directly with Yusuf's majority implants. His implants were wirelessly linked to one of the majority hubs that generate the virtual world, retaining and updating its past in real time as dominant opinions shifted. Without fuss, a void behind Yusuf's chair sucked him into that calibrated past. The void spit Yusuf out like a child from a water slide. He was in his home, blandly suburban on the outside, distinguishable from its neighbors only by shrub, the earth tone of its siding, and address number. Those of his subdivision believed in only leashed variety. In Yusuf's memory, the living room was bright and sparsely decorated. A good Muslim indulges little in ostentation. He only had two of God's names penned in calligraphic whorls and framed, Ar-Rahim and Al-Haq, the merciful and the truth. Other than that, sunlight filtering through geometrical patterns in his blinds was enough. But the blinds were opaque. It was too lived in. The air was stale and rife with moldering food. The alcove where he prayed was askew, nearer to the bathroom than it should be. It wasn't even facing Mecca, and sickeningly, an automatic rifle was propped inside. The only thing unchanged was the calligraphy. The mass of humanity had reduced his home to this? Must a convicted terrorist live in a sty, hate light, hate God and every human thing? So many were paranoid of terrorism. The media blew even botched attacks or a single death out of proportion, propagated terror. Did the terrorist work for them? So majority proliferated terrorist.
Mr. Kassab, you may wish to sit down.
The judge said in his mind.
And if you want to return, say the word. I've sent you here to enlighten you, not to cause undue distress.
Apparently, the majority still believed in the injustice of cruel and unusual punishment. He didn't sit at first. There is dignity in defiance, but there is petulance too. He sat. He heard the garage door clang and grind. The NSA said they tracked the perpetrator's IP address to his home, at least insofar as they could trace it. The terrorist must have broken in while he was away. A shadow swept in from the kitchen, almost invisible in the low light. A body came after it. Long, sinister fingers spidered in the air, shuffling glyphs, semanticizing some terrible vision. Every motion was bone and sinew and machination. The man at the center wore a white turban. He didn't cackle. No one believes real people cackle. But he chuckled in a self-satisfied way every now and then when glyphs merged into a novel form, more intricate than their parts, closer to completion. Yusuf's crime, or alleged crime, was a cyber attack on healthcare systems. Hundreds of hospitals' patients' records garbled and the decryption key deleted. The point wasn't to extract ransom. The point was mayhem. The harder to recover from, the better. And if governments knew how to break the encryption, they were mum for national security reasons.
I've done it. Allahu Akbar.
That was Yusuf's voice. The man whirled in jubilation. His eyes were too wide, his nose too sharp, his build too lanky, his skin too brown. He had a beard that had probably never been trimmed. Yusuf and this other had a certain resemblance. They could be brothers, but anyone seeing them side by side wouldn't believe them the same person. But majority opinion is prone to contradiction. Majority mimics that too. As well as it can. Yusuf shivered, disbelieving.
That's not me.
He scrambled backwards towards the front door.
I'll tell enough people. I'll make it as it was.
We're done here,
said the judge in his mind. The dark water slide slurped him up again. Yusuf spewed out, not in the defendant's chair, but draped in the vestigial witness stand.
I saw me, but it couldn't be.
He wasn't that cartoon villain.
I know what I remember.
You remember? Memories are fickle things, Mr. Kassab.
As if to make her point, he couldn't even remember where he had been that day. He had an alibi. His credit card had even corroborated it. But what was it?
But majority is not fickle. How could the array upon array of redundant servers that is the memory of majority betray our trust?
Yusuf couldn't tell whether she meant servers in the real world or majority's self-representation.
Are you certain you remember the truth?
He did, or thought he did. But could majority rewrite even his memory? He clawed at the translucent implant stitched into the back of his neck. They changed dreams into majority. He wouldn't be here without them. But the implants didn't loosen. Most everyone in majority believes everyone in majority has implants. He froze, remembering. Even if he could wake into reality, removing the implants was fatal.
Yusuf Kassab, I want you to listen to me carefully. I know your arrest has come as a surprise, and now witnessing yourself commit an act of terrorism. Yours is a difficult case. If the peak of the migration from the external world was just a few months delayed, millions would know of your acquittal there, and not just the media flurry here, and we would not be having this conversation. You are just one man on the wrong side of history, I'm afraid.
Her concern stoked a lick of his old fire.
But isn't justice supposed to be about rights? Even mine? Even just mine?
The justice due to you is not in question, but justice respects truth. The truth that acquitted you, even now, is breathing its last.
Yusuf exhaled, sensing his life was tied to the life of that truth. The judge waited. Perhaps silence will clear the ground so that her words might reach him.
Think on what majority has done for societies. In the external world, we abolished authoritarian governments, monarchies, the specters of communism, and that was a triumph. But reality itself, that old backworld, remained obtuse. It didn't care about democracy. It didn't matter how politicians spun, how postmodern scholars relativized knowledge, how much celebrities paid plastic surgeons and lip-sang their own music. Post-truth was not enough. We had to construct truth, so we made majority.
Yusuf shook his head, amazed.
Why are you telling me this?
Because the majority expects this court to furnish a casualty such as yourself with extraordinary regard.
He knew now that he was reaching the end, that his sentencer would wait only for him to succumb to her pariahical view of truth. In that, he could resist.
But you've already admitted there's another truth. Reality. Real truth. And yet you have this blind devotion to democracy. To democracy made absolute.
I am a woman concerned with results. Majority ended the embarrassing parade of criminological error. First, in the 20th century, innocent men and women were convicted of capital crimes, but posthumously exonerated by DNA evidence. Then more convicts exonerated, too late, by more discerning polygraphs. Still more, in a sense, exonerated by technology subtle enough to read beliefs, technology that finally redeemed all by constructing the reality around us. At last, we have no need for lawyers or evidence. We only need rewind and witness the truth.
But you can tell everyone. Everyone could believe it wasn't me.
That is not easily done, Mr. Kassab. Do you realize how many have rewound themselves and witnessed patient deaths? Doctors did not know which medications they administered to whom, did not know patient allergies or diagnoses. Some deaths are grisly, and the inertia of belief is not so easily overcome.
You could try.
I'm sorry, this court is not in the business of spreading propaganda.
She no longer had to tell him that all that distinguishes information from propaganda is the percentage of people that believe. Only one question remained.
What happens to me now?
You've committed a capital crime and must be executed now that the process has at last been alleviated of error.
He didn't quail. The bountiful majority obliged him that much dignity.
In the real world?
Don't be silly. To speak of the external world is to speak of hypotheticals. What jurisdiction does this court have over hypotheticals?
So I'll only die here?
I needn't be any clearer, Mr. Kassab.
Yusuf rallied. He'd be free. However much things had fallen apart out there, there would be others. Those that refused the implants.
But speaking hypothetically, I expect you will be unable to sleep. Sleeping in the external world means waking here. And how could the majority believe that dead men wake?
In this episode of Simultaneous Times, you heard Patient X5 by Cora Bullard, with music by Fog Machine, and Trial in Majority by Andy Dibble, with music by Red Blue Black Silver. Theme music by Dane Lesko. Out now, Simultaneous Times, Volume 1, Paperback Science Fiction Anthology. Available at spacecowboybooks.com and lulu.com. Be sure to visit us at our store in Joshua Tree, California, or at spacecowboybooks.com. And connect with us on Instagram or Twitter. We'd love to know what you think of the program.